I would like to start off today's discussion by clarifying something which seems to have been a misunderstanding last week. I received a lot of letters, received even a lot of phone calls where people were saying that I should not stop these broadcasts. Now, I'm really sorry that I let the idea float that I was struggling, I had a dilemma about what to speak, but it did not mean that I wanted to stop the broadcast. It simply meant that it was difficult for me to figure out what to speak about each week, and really I was kind of reaching out to all of you to express that I'm here for you in this particular interaction we have on Saturday, and that I'm very much dependent on what you would like to hear, what you would like to see, what you would like to have in these broadcasts. And when I feel that you are kind of satiated, it makes it more difficult for me. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to stop. It doesn't mean that I'm bored. It doesn't mean that I would rather do something else. None of those are true. It just means that how do you feed your dinner guests when they seem to be full? Just imagine my situation. I'm a cook, and I'm preparing really a wonderful feast. And all of the guests who come to my feast are not hungry. They eat out of politeness. They eat because they've been invited. And so they think it's a, you know, cool thing. We come and we'll hang out and we'll eat a little bit. But, you know, I've cooked this incredible feast for you with all the best preparations you can imagine. And then you're not hungry. So that's a dilemma. You know, I mean, it's not like I don't want to cook. It's not that I don't want to invite you to the feast. It's just that, do you really want to come for a feast? Or what is the reason for coming? Now, that was my mood last week. And I thought I would just clarify that. Not that I want to stop speaking. Not that I want to stop the broadcast. Not at all. Quite the contrary. I actually live from Saturday to Saturday. I don't know how to describe this, but my life is defined by Saturday. Everything I do is done in relationship to Saturday. Saturday is the beginning and end of the week. Everything culminates in Saturday. Now, that's interesting because I was born on a Saturday, and my chart is ruled by Saturn. Now, that's very interesting. Now, that Saturday has become the prominent day in my life. It also makes sense. Sundays are kind of like really, shall we say, relaxed day. We spend the day dressing the deities, and my parents come over, and, you know, we just take care of things and do a little this and a little that. Sunday's a real take-it-easy day. And Saturday, for me, is the day in which, chop, 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 I do so many things. Before I walk into this room to sit in front of this microphone, I usually wash all the dishes, clean the entire kitchen. I do a couple of laundries. I change all the towels. I change all the sheets. I pick up all the mess that little doggies have brought here and there, and little kitty cats have brought here and there. I fix this, and I organize that, and I send emails, and I check this, and I check that. And, of course, I eat at one point, and I get my bead bag, and I run up and down, and I chant, and I sit in front of the deities, and then I meditate. And every now and then I come over here to see if there's any instant message. And then I run back and just always make sure that this broadcast is running, the music is fine. All in all, before I sit down here, I'm working up a sweat. You see, but you can't see that because it's not very high quality. If this was TV, you'd see me a little bit perspiring. I remember once I was on a Good Morning Soviet Union. I think this was around 1992. And they told me in the TV station that 120 million people watch this show and that I have to put makeup on. And I said, makeup? Do you want me to put makeup on? They said, absolutely. Everybody on this TV wears makeup because when the lights hit you, you shine. And you have to be flat in the face. So we want to put makeup on you so that you will look, proper for the TV. And I just went, oh my God, makeup, what's in that stuff? I said, honestly, forgive me, but I couldn't for a million years imagine putting makeup on. I'm just going to have to be shiny. So the interesting thing about these web cameras, well, not really the web camera, but when it becomes rebroadcast through Shoutcast, is that the quality is so reduced, just so that it's easy for you to attend this lecture, that you don't notice that I'm shiny from doing all this stuff and running around in the morning. Actually, you don't notice anything that's going on. It's kind of a grand illusion. Like, for example, that wall in the back. Isn't that a fun-looking thing? It's very plain. It's very bland. And I'm wearing this green shirt because it fits perfectly to the blue chair and the wall in the back. I can't wear yellow or red because it'll ruin the whole camera thing. And you think like this is like where the way it is here. But actually, if I were to remove that right now, you would see wires everywhere and entangling mess everywhere because that's where all my music stuff's happening. And I'm preparing for the next recording session we're going to have with our wonderful North Pole people. So it's like there's a lot happening. And I like the idea of making the majority of my Saturday to sit with all of you and just share. So it's not like I want to stop. Not at all. I kind of like it very much. In fact, if my life wasn't defined from Saturday to Saturday, I have absolutely no idea what I would do. Honestly speaking, it's like almost that you help me define what I am in a very, very significant way. It's very, very significant to me that you are there. This idea of speaking. Now, somebody was thinking that perhaps it was a struggle. Actually, for me, speaking is never a struggle. I'm somebody who can babble about anything. You know, it's just something I do. You could just give me a topic and I can babble about it. It's just a talent I have, a gift of babbling. But I don't think you've come here to hear some babbling. You want to hear something which is relevant. You want to hear something which is significant for you. Or at least something which is inspiring. Or perhaps something which is interesting, which is new, which expands your horizons. And I understand that. I think that's great. After all, why bother? It's Saturday night in Russia. After all, you're 8 hours ahead. It's Saturday night. You could do all kinds of interesting things on a Saturday night. I mean, it leaves me in a state of awe that you people would basically sacrifice Saturday night to sit there and listen to something I would say. For me, this is awe-inspiring. I mean, if you if you remember the Elton John song, Saturday, or maybe it was who? Billy Joel. Saturday, 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 Saturday. It's a very important day. It's the day that most people in the evening go out and do something fun. They go out to some place, they party, they do whatever they do. But you guys are sitting there and listening. And I think that's a very big responsibility for me to somehow or another do something which is important, significant, that you would like on Saturday night. Even for you who find it, it's the morning time. That's also awe-inspiring because Saturday, generally, people don't work. So Saturday morning, we sleep longer. Sunday morning, we really sleep longer. But Saturday morning, we sleep longer. So to have to get up and watch this in the morning, that's all also awe-inspiring. So all of this makes me feel as if I have a responsibility. And when I say I have a responsibility, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't think it's bad at all. I think it challenges me. And I like being challenged. Of course, I don't like being too challenged that, you know, I get a headache. But this is not that kind of a challenge. This is the kind of a challenge that I suppose anybody who relates with others has. How can we as people remain interesting? Now, in the forums, I don't know if you've been up with what's going on in the forums, especially if you're only a Russian speaker or a foreign language speaker, you would not necessarily have capacity to read everything in the English forum. But there was a question from Aicha, and that question was sitting in the forum for quite some time. And every morning I would put that question up and I would just look at it and I would go, how am I going to answer that? Because in that question, there was this like this point about being interesting. And I suppose he didn't understand that, or she didn't, whoever, didn't understand that the question was striking on something which was very difficult for me to deal with. In the question, I just said, I have a problem of not finding people interesting. So now I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I have to be interesting. Now I know that wasn't the meaning of the question. I know it had nothing to do basically with the question. But you know, I'm a person too, and when people say things, it affects me. And it makes me wonder about myself. It's not that I'm egocentric and I think the whole universe revolves around me. Maybe I am to a certain extent. But I think that it's important that I somehow or another am the best I can be. And part of that is I should be interesting. Now, it's very hard to be interesting. How do you be interesting? Now, of course, everybody who's funny is somebody you would want to see. Everybody who can make a good act is somebody you would want to watch. People who play nice music are people you'd like to listen to. But are they interesting? You might say, this is interesting music. But you don't know if the person making the music is interesting or not as a person. You know the music they make is interesting, but you don't know if they are as a person interesting. I find that fascinating. I think about this in relation to art all the time, creativity, what it means to be interesting. Now, I know when I speak on Saturday, it's not technically art. I mean, when we think of art, we think of painting, sculpture. We think of music. We think of drama. We think of dance. We think of these expressions, writing, poetry. We think of these expressions as something which is more than an ordinary communication. It is something where there's an expression which has to a certain extent to do with the abstract. I mean, even somebody who takes a photograph of nature, or somebody who paints, even very realistically. For example, if you take the masters, the great masters of art, Dutch masters or in that genre, who were superb at reproducing reality or portraits. Yet we don't call them masters because they perfectly captured photographically reality. We call them masters because they captured through the eye of their own mind the essence of that reality which was in front of them when they painted. In other words, we are seeing through them what they see through their eyes. And when you look at the image as if it was reality, you know it's not a photograph. Yet, you look at it and say, it's perfect. It's a perfect reproduction of reality, yet it has a flavor to it. It has a subtlety to it, which is an expression of the artist and makes that artist, that great personality that artist is. Now, that's a very important point. It's an important point because we can see for the first time how this expression is very much linked to the personality who expresses it. So consider discussions, consider talk, and consider how it is intimately connected with the personality who is talking or expressing. So from that point of view, even if, for example, I'm going to describe how, you know, some particular aspect of reality, it is an expression of my personality. I don't want to mention names, but there's a very famous website where there has a doctor who is very expert at various forms of alternative therapies, who understands very well how things should be physically in your life. And as long as he was writing columns, you really appreciated his expressions. Then he made a very big mistake, which I think he himself hasn't understood, is he started doing webcasts. He has a video camera on top of his computer in his office, and he records with high quality his discussions about various issues. So now he's made some big mistake. Number one, he doesn't look good on camera. Number two, he doesn't have a clue about how his background affects the people's capacity to concentrate on what he's saying. Number three, his voice does not lend itself to broadcast medium. Number four, his physical expressions do not relate to something which is interesting about what he's speaking about. And number five, and probably the worst of all, by recording a broadcast about a particular subject, he's forcing his viewers to commit to the 30 minutes or 1 hour which he speaks about one subject. Now, when he put it in a column, you could scroll down and skip the stuff that you're not interested in and get to the real meat of the issue. Now you can't do that anymore. And I've seen his whole website is transforming. There's a lot of fanatics there, a lot of people blowing off steam in their own particular way. I can't tolerate it anymore. So now I'm seeing all of these things. I'm watching this guy and I'm saying, what do I look like on these broadcasts? That's why you see me always looking over there. Because over there is where my monitor is. I'm watching what I look like to you. Because it's very important to me how I look to you. Because you're the one looking at me. So if I look like an idiot on that little screen over there that I'm looking at, I say, hold everything. Run that back. Do that again. No, that's not possible. This is live. If I, you know, make some insane face and then I say, oh my God, why did I do that? I can't do anything about it. It's already done. It happened. This is live TV. There's not even a 10-second, you know, in all live TV now, they have this 10-second period of censoring where the editor can go beep when somebody says something wrong. Like, for example, if I just lose my mind and go, what the beep is going on? They just, you know, put a beep in there, and that way nobody has to be offended by hearing a word that they hear 1,000 times a day. But anyway, so therefore, the idea is that I've got to be interesting. And yet, for me, being interesting is related to a lot of things. It's like related to, first of all, you have to be interested in something. That's why I brought up that example of cooking and your need to be hungry before you come to eat. That's why when we invite people to parties, we say, come hungry. Because if you come hungry, your taste buds are more forgiving. Like, for example, if you're already full when you come, or you're not very hungry, and it tastes great, you'll eat it anyway. Like, who says no to chocolate cake with all kinds of ice cream oozing over the top? Nobody says no, except me or other idiots who are totally into health. But you will just say, oh God, that tastes so good. And you'll just want to eat it because it just tastes so good. And, oh, I came here so full, I just can't resist because it tastes so good. But when you are not sure what you're cooking and if they'll like it or not, you tell them, come hungry. In fact, come starving. Don't eat for a week before you come. Because when they walk in the door, they're going to be so hungry, they're just going to eat everything that you offer them. They are just going to eat and they're not going to mind at all. They're not going to have any problem whatsoever with anything that you cook. Now, my problem is my audience on Saturday hungry or not? I don't know. I don't know until you sit in front of me. Just like when you sit down for the feast and you know people are hungry, they don't talk. Have you ever noticed that when people are so hungry and they're just busy eating, it becomes very quiet around the table until people have fed themselves sufficiently? Then they start talking. But if the food's not so good, or they're not so interested, they start talking a lot. That's the worst for the host, to see that people are talking and not eating. Then you just go, oh boy, what a disaster. And if they're just quiet, you say, ah, what a success. Because, you know, they're just eating. And then you just kind of sit there like my grandma used to do and go, manja, 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 bene. And you're just so happy that they're just eating and eating and eating. That means eat, eat in Italian. So the idea is to understand about what people find interesting and to deal with that. Now, let's talk about creativity for a second. And I think this is totally related to this topic. People are interested in things which express the creativity of the living being. Anything that expresses the creativity. Now, this is the really interesting point about it, how being interesting and creativity are related. Now, we were talking about what is interesting. I feel, personally, that what is most interesting about people is when they express themselves really for what they are. You know, not for what they want you to see, not for how they think they should be towards others, not how they think you want them to be, and thus they're acting according to what you wish. But really what's interesting about people is when they are what they are. They are just personalities. They are simply what they are. And they realize they can't be anything else than what they are. They simply are. That's all there is to it. There are many personalities like that, especially in the artistic field. Now, for example, politicians, they can't be like that because they depend on your votes, and therefore they have to woo you into voting for them. They have to convince you to vote for them. So therefore they have to present themselves in a certain way. And then you've got like doctors and lawyers and other professional kind of people. There are certain standards of behavior that are expected of them. So they have to present themselves in that way. But artists of various kinds, they're a weird bunch. They don't have to follow rules. In fact, the public expects them to break rules. They are kind of a group that just does all kinds of wild things and expresses themselves creatively. And people like that very much. Now, let's talk about creativity in relationship to this kind of artistic expression. Now, every artist knows that creativity is tough to come by sometimes. Sometimes you're inspired, and sometimes you're not inspired. Sometimes everything flows. Sometimes it doesn't flow. But when an artist is in pain, when an artist is feeling crushed by the world, when an artist is just frustrated by the reality around them, it manifests as an artistic expression. For example, a painter, they stand in front of their canvas and throw paint on it. That's, you know, instead of throwing glasses against the wall and smashing them, they throw paint on the canvas and then they look at it and they go, hey, that's interesting. Then they fix it up here and they fix it up there. They get inspired. Their pain was the impetus by which this creation could just manifest. The most tormented artists were actually the best ones. When they're tormented, their art just flows with creativity. Therefore, pain is at the basis of artistic expression. Now, of course, okay, you can have an artist who can sit and paint pleasant pictures. They don't need pain to be expressive. They can paint flowers, or they can paint a scene of a waterfront, or they can play dinner music, or they can make a TV show about anything that's very normal. Because they're not tormented, they don't need to be tormented. Everything's fine. So they create things which are fine. And how are you? I'm fine. And we watch it and we go, this is fine. And yet it may not be very interesting. These are the kind of works of art you put up here and there in the bathroom, or in the hallway, or in the waiting room of the dentist's office. And they play that kind of music. Na 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 na. and everybody listens, and it's just pleasant and nice, and it's okay. But it's not that kind of tormented expression that just tears at your psyche, that challenges your emotions, that pushes you to new creative limits, and which is interesting. And that's my dilemma. Now, how do you sit here and be interesting? Am I actually tormented? Am I feeling great pain? Maybe. I mean, it's possible. I'm not, you know, so aware of it as being pain and torment like that, but I suppose I've got a lot of stuff rolling around in there that I could figure out is like inspiring me to speak or inspiring me to do something on Saturday. Maybe it's just boredom. I mean, that's possible. You can be pretty bored, you know, cutting the lawn and trimming the plants and vacuuming the house and brushing the kitty cats and stuff like that. But it's also fun. I mean, is it boredom? I mean, is my life going from Saturday to Saturday because I'm bored Sunday through Friday? I don't think so. I'm not terribly bored. I mean, every minute there's stuff going on. I think it's really the challenge. I think it's you are there. You are sitting there. You are people who are smart. You listen. You like to hear something interesting. You like it that it challenges your mind. You like it that it enters into your head and makes some atoms move around up there in the mind and stuff. And you do see ultimately how it relates to the very essence of what you are. Now, this is the part that I like most about Saturday. I'm talking about something and everybody's kind of got the point and they're capturing the essence of it. And then I got to get to go zap. Here's where it relates to what we are. This is the point at which it hits the very essence of our being and makes life really what it is and allows us to sit back and look at our lives with a feeling of awe, like, wow, that is really something. Like when you do something very special, you create a manifestation which is very special, which is something you weren't aware you had in your heart. You weren't aware you had the capacity to manifest. A way in which you could manifest some spiritual energy coming from the core of your being, which was something that so represented how you are as a person, that you look back and you go, I didn't know I could do that. There are moments like that in our lives. There's a lot of normalness in all of our lives. And yet there are occasionally moments which all of a sudden this surge, this passion that is within reaches out in the world and just expresses itself or makes its mark. It says, I exist. Mainly people are walking around and saying, I make sense here. I am like everybody else. I am normal. I am comfortable, compatible. We don't make waves. Yet, you know, the worst thing is like when you're in a canoe. You know what a canoe is, this thing that you paddle with. You know a canoe? And so the worst thing is when some idiot gets in the canoe and thinks they're very funny and they start banging both sides on the water with their hands and they make waves and they're laughing like, ah ha ha. Shouldn't you be enjoying this? It's something different. It's something interesting. We're in danger. We can fall in the water. I always hated idiots like that. I mean, anybody who does such silly things, I just say, okay, if we ever make it back to the shore, which I'm not sure of at the time, you're never going in a boat with me again. Because this kind of unexpected silliness where the only excitement in life is to make things dangerous or to do stupid things and challenge people like that is not interesting to me. But I do find it very interesting when all of a sudden somebody who is Mr. or Mrs. Normal expresses something straight from that core where they're just saying, I exist. This is me. This is my life. This is my feeling. This is the way I am. Take it or leave it. And at that time, when that actually happens, in those moments, the person who said that, the person who expressed that, feels enormous strength, feels enormous connection to the universe, feels for the first time, perhaps in weeks or in months, or perhaps in their whole life, I am significant. I am something special. Of course, you know, we hear it all the time. You're special. This is one of the ways in which we alternative people speak. We are special. You are special. Okay, it's one thing to say it, and that's fine. But it's just words until in reality you actually feel it. Somebody can tell you you are special. Somebody can tell you many things. But until you feel it. Now, of course, I don't mean that you walk around feeling special. And therefore you now become obnoxious to others. I mean those moments where you have captured your power, so to speak. You have expressed what you are. You have expressed your specialness, your uniqueness. Now, I know the word special has problems because, you know, many people advertise specials. You can only get this here from us, or even though you can get it from anywhere. We offer a special price. Special this, special that. It's a word which is misused. So special we think of meaning like I'm just really something special, something extraordinary. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about uniqueness. Of course, other people may talk about special in any way they want. But when I'm using the word, I mean uniqueness. I don't mean special. Okay, you're special. Big deal. So what? Okay, you're unique. That means something. When you use the word unique, it means you're the only one of your kind. I can say you're special. But then again, the other one is special. And even that guy I hate is special. And even that obnoxious character who tried to tip over the canoe is special. Okay, everybody's special. Big deal. Who cares? It's another one of those words which mean nothing. Yet sometimes people put such importance in such words. The real word which relates to the real experience that means what this idea was supposed to have expressed is that we are unique. There's only one of us. We are unique. Our personalities are unique. Now, sometimes people say, big deal, because I am boring. I am dull. I am plain. There's nothing special about me. Now, I know a lot of people believe that. But if you look at it philosophically, and again, that may not be the best way to do it, because sometimes these philosophical ideas, as we have demonstrated, are not related to the reality of our situation. But we would all accept there is this oneness of spirit, this oneness of spirituality which is there, connected with the Supreme, connected with Radha, Krishna, connected with all of the devas, connected with us. We are all part of this vast oneness of existence. That is our basic premise. It is also that which we experience when we meditate in that way. It is also that which we move into, we enter into through our evolution. And in that experience of that, we have different little unique us's everywhere, which are those personalities who are part of the sum total of all existence. Now, if we say that we, that part of that sum total, are a plain vanilla version of existence. Plain vanilla means no flavor in it other than the vanilla, the common vanilla. And that person over there has chocolate and cherries. And that person over there has got bananas and nuts. But we are just plain vanilla. And we feel sorry for ourselves like that. That not only is something which completely throws the whole oneness out of balance, but it is also something which diminishes the value of this entire existence. If one thinks like that, one is basically saying some souls are more significant than other souls. One might say that we are all unique, but then we would say that soul over there is more powerful than me. But that's also not, even though it may be true, that's not something that relates to significance. Because what do you mean by powerful? Bigger? Stronger? What does it mean? After all, we might feel that an atom bomb is vastly powerful, incredibly destructively powerful. And if an atom bomb were to go off in our neighborhood, we're all finished and it's a horrible thing. But if you get just a little tiny insignificant germ entering into you and it kills you, does that mean that little insignificant nothing germ, which entered you by mistake, the germ thought it was just plain vanilla. The germ didn't even have the capacity to think if it was important or not. The germ didn't even have the capacity to understand it could harm you. This little nothing, insignificant nothing, comes in your body and kills you. And now let's talk about this, because the atom bomb, in one sense, that's an easy thing to deal with. I mean, it goes off and then at the speed of light, you're dead. The speed of light, if it's close, you're dead. Now that means you don't even know it happened. You don't even have to suffer. You don't have any time to worry. You can't even have last thoughts or words. It's finished instantly. Yet this little bug makes you get sicker, 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 pain, suffering, torment, gradual getting to death, everybody tearing their hair out, money being spent like mad to cure you. Yet everybody would assume the atom bomb is more powerful than the little bug. But ultimately, as far as the person who's being killed is concerned, the little bug was far worse, far more powerful, far more significant in our lives than the atom bomb. But the people who are far away from the atom disaster, look at it and say, oh, how horrifying, how terrible. And it is, from their point of view. And even worse, from the point of view of people who haven't been killed instantly and wish they were. And yet the other people who might look from a distance at, you know, people who died from food poisoning, they would not think it very significant in the bigger scheme of things. So that proves our conception of more powerful, more this, or more anything is relative. It's a very relative conception that is based upon a very relative and a very, shall we say, point of view which is very subjective. It's very subjective how we view power or not power. Take, for example, this lady, Paris Hilton. She's in all the news all the time, all of the gossip columns everywhere. Videos of her have been around the internet 100,000 times. She's in a family of billionaires. This lady is like, you know, people think about her all the time. And everyone thinks, wow, what a life. Wow, how great, this and that. It's actually a very insignificant thing, but people make it subjectively very important. She was driving improperly. She had been... No. She was driving improperly, and they put her in jail. I don't remember, 45, 60 days, something like that. And then she got her lawyers to do something with a doctor to get her out of jail after 3 days because she couldn't stand it anymore. And so some judge agreed to that. And then there was a big uproar, and another judge said, no, back to jail for you. So they grabbed her and put her back in jail, and she was crying and kicking, and this is horrible, I can't stand it. So subjectively speaking, because there's money and there's youth and there's a little bit of beauty and there's wealth, enormous wealth and power, so we think that this is really something special. Hilton is the Hilton Hotels. You don't have Hilton Hotels in Russia? You must in Moscow. The biggest one probably is a Hilton. Huh? Okay, anyway. So, yeah. So, the idea is that, subjectively speaking, from a relative point of view, we have made people powerful. But when we see an equalization there, for example, when they reveal that their lives are not very happy, when they reveal that their relationships are terrible, when they reveal that they're having drug problems, then their power turns against them because we had such high expectations of them, and actually they were just like us, or even worse than us. We're not drug addicts. We don't waste all our money. We don't hurt others with very strange things we do, or even our children or whatever. So then all of a sudden, that subjective point of view changes, and these people face condemnation. Both of these states of being glorified and being condemned are illusory. They are subjective, relative considerations of the people who are viewing. We, the public. As a public, we have enormous power. We make or break politicians. We make or break stars. We are the public. It's our money that says you're good or you're not good. It's our applause that says we like you or we throw tomatoes at you. In other words, we have power as the public. And we increase your power so that you will increase our enjoyment. And when you misuse that, we tear you down. It's all relative. So by definition, let's go back to the spiritual thing. Each and every spirit, by definition, is essentially as interesting, as creative, as capable of expressing themselves in their own unique way. And their unique expression of personality is a very important and essential aspect of what each and every one of us are. In fact, it's the way in which we contact our spirituality. What is the use of all kinds of spiritual practices if you can't express yourself spiritually? If the only way you can express yourself spiritually is by some energy, that is not very satisfying. Let's take, for example, this is a really subtle little point that I think you're going to catch rapidly that really makes or nails something very significant about the various mistakes that have manifested of recent times in either religion or in spirituality throughout the world. For example, if I were to chant with the Murdunga, as we did in the beginning, a chant which you've heard a million times, where I'm just following a melody which has been very specifically defined. And the only way I was able to express my real spirituality through that melody was to somehow emanate some energy which could somehow emanate from my voice and capture you. Now, I'm not saying that's not possible. It's definitely possible. And people do it all the time. But just consider how I would feel so limited to having that as the only medium of my spiritual expression. I could only do it by being inspired within that limited framework of that melody. But I'm a musician. Okay, I'm not a great musician, but still I am a musician. A musician is one who plays music. I play music. So by definition, I'm a musician. And for me, what inspires me is when I've got freedom to create. I'm that way musically. That's why I like to play with these North Pole guys. Why? Because I am allowed to just freely express together with others who are freely expressing, and it makes sense. I'm not limited to playing a certain chord progression or playing a very certain kind of a song format. For me, that's like death. I could never play music in a wedding band. I would lose my mind. I can only play music when I'm inspired. So when I'm chanting, like for example in the beginning of this broadcast, and if I think I've got to sing a melody which everybody knows, okay, if I want you to respond, I have to do that. But this is not possible in this medium. So I don't have to do that. So there's really no reason why I have to sing what you need to hear. I can just sing what I want to sing. Now that's interesting. And when I do that, I become inspired. My creativity flows according to my capacities to express it. So not only do I have the avenue of expressing my spirituality through the voice or through my energy, I have the avenue to do it through my fingers. I have the avenue of doing it through my voice. I can sing melodies as I like. I can express the music as I like. I can make it softer. I can make it louder. I can make it longer. I can do whatever I want. I have free, flowing capacity. That allows me to express myself spiritually. Imagine you're an artist and you're only allowed to paint a picture according to what has been there in the scripture. It will be very difficult for you to express yourself. Now, this is where what I feel and what traditional Indian disciplines feel about the expression of art. For example, they value an artistic expression which perfectly reproduces some kind of pastime or some kind of scriptural event. And when artists prepare their presentations, when they are learning, they are taught to be detached from their work. Okay, I understand detachment. That's fine. I mean, after all, to walk around and hug your painting all day and, you know, think of it as the whole expression of your life, that's a waste of time. But yet, I don't like the idea that your expression has to be limited to this particular style, this particular subject, this particular expectation, because it forces the medium becomes superior, the message becomes superior to the expression, to the personality who is expressing it. Indeed, the whole artistic background of India, for example, is that the personality expressing the religious music is not very important. It is the expression detached from the expressor that is important. And therefore, it is said, don't hear from somebody who's not very strict and not very good and not very... Because the personality who's expressing in this particular format has to be just very proper. But what if the personality expressing felt very inspired by the expression and allowed their spiritual expression and their spiritual energy just to flow? And compare that to somebody who's very proper in all ways, but who presents things because that's the way you do it. It seems to me that I think there's a very grave misunderstanding about creativity, about being interesting, about expressions. And these things have been suppressed in religious traditions, in spiritual traditions, and replaced by expected manifestations which supposedly reflect spirituality. And if a person has the power, for example, through their speech or whatever, or their singing, to manifest the spirituality, that is the only medium available to them. But I don't see it like that. I see that any expression we make, which is actually from the deepest essence of what we are, and don't make the mistake of thinking that that unique spiritual being doesn't express. Sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking that if and when we go to the spiritual world, our whole interaction, our whole expression will simply be to look at Radha and Krishna through the bushes, or to giggle, or to, you know, talk about making sandesh for Krishna, or to throw lunches of each other around. Okay, that's fine. I'm not trying to say there's something wrong with that. But there's so much more to expression. There's so much more to when the spirit actually connects with existence. It does not matter where that existence is. That existence here in the material world certainly has more impetus for expression. The pain that the artists experience that comes from the material world pressing on them, it inspires creativity. It inspires the expression. In fact, some of the greatest expressions ever made by people were born of the greatest tragedy of their lives. It's even stated spiritually that, you know, when God takes everything away from you, that's when you've got the opportunity to be the most spiritual. It seems to me that we have underestimated the power. We have underestimated the significance. We have underestimated the way our expressions integrate in our spiritual lives and into our existence outside of us, wherever that may be. Either here, in some celestial realm, in some spiritual dimension, or whatever. Sometimes we experience that momentarily, spiritually, in a temple room or something. Sometimes we experience that momentarily in our connections to other divine beings. But it is that experience which means everything. It is that experience which is the whole, shall we call, spark of that essence which can ignite a fire of expression which will be what we share. Each and every one of us. You don't need art to do it. It can be done with words. It can be done by motion. It can be done by an act of kindness. It can be done just by being there for others. These acts of significance are the potential of all of us. And it is this potential that should be tapped. It is this potential that should grow. It is this potential which every one of us uniquely have in our own unique particular way. And it is this potential which makes us what we are. And I applaud that in each and every one of you. Not because you're special, because when everybody's special, nobody's special, by definition. But because you're unique. And you can't say when everybody's unique, nobody's unique. Because unique means you're the only one. And that is something I applaud in all of you. And if I'm talking to you, if I'm together with you, or I'm even speaking to you as a group, it is that uniqueness that I reach out for. It is that uniqueness which I embrace and which I want you to share with me, and which you should want me to share with you. And that's what I do. That's really what I do on Saturday. And I try to relate this to spirituality in a way which will help all of us become powerful. I don't mean powerful in the sense of having physical power or even any kind of power over something. I mean that we just allow ourselves to be what we are without editing it, without judging it, without condemning it, without pushing it down and repressing it.